Have you ever wondered why exactly it is that things usually sound better at home than they do on stage, in auditions, or even in lessons? It's easy to chalk it up to nerves or assume that you just have to practice more or get more performance experience. And sure, those things certainly are part of the puzzle, but a lot of times that's not really the true root cause. If you've been confused by the inconsistency of your performances, I put together a free 4-minute quiz called the Mental Skills Audit, which will help you pinpoint your mental strengths and weaknesses and figure out what exactly to adjust and tweak in your preparation for more consistently optimal performances. You can take the Mental Skills Audit online at bulletproofmusician.com/MSA. That's MSA for Mental Skills Audit. And again, it's 100% free, and it'll take just 4 minutes to get your results emailed to you as a PDF. This is Noah Kageyama, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Musician Podcast. Every Sunday morning, we'll take a look at a new research-based tip or technique to help you practice more effectively or perform better under pressure. And on the first Sunday of every month, I'll have a guest from the music, sport, or research world who will share their insights on how we can all be a little more awesome in the practice room and on stage. In 1948, the UCLA men's basketball team finished with a 12-13 record. Hoping to turn things around, they hired a young coach named John Wooden, who had spent the last 2 years coaching at Indiana State University. He made an immediate impact at UCLA, coaching the team to a division title and a 22-7 record, more wins than they had ever had in a season. He did even better the next year, helping his team secure another division title and a 24-7 record. He went on to become the greatest coach in college basketball history, if not basketball, period, leading his UCLA teams to 10 national championships in 12 years, including 7 in a row and a record 88-game winning streak. And it's not because he always had the most talented players. Some of his teams were only modestly talented or had notable weaknesses. Yet, year after year, he managed to raise the level of their play and get them to perform at a championship level when it mattered most. So what was it about his coaching or teaching style that led to such unprecedented success? Was it his masterful use of praise, strategic use of criticism, or maybe both? Psychologists Roland Tharp and Ronald Gallimore were interested in education and learning and thought that observing and analyzing John Wooden's teaching methods might deepen their understanding of how this works, or more specifically, help them understand how more teachers can get the very best out of their students. So over the course of 15 practices during the 1974-75 season, which was Wooden's last at UCLA, they sat, observed, and systematically tracked Wooden's specific coaching behaviors, which added up to 2,326 acts of teaching, they called them, in total. So how much of this was praise, and how much was criticism? Very little, actually. Just over half of Wooden's behaviors were pure instruction, specific statements about what to do or how to do it. No judgment, no approval or disapproval, just information. The next most frequently occurring teacher behavior at 12.7% was called a hustle. This was basically a cue or reminder to act on some previous instruction. For instance, drive or harder, or of course, hustle. Next most frequent was what the researchers affectionately named a wooden, a unique feedback technique that was a combination of scolding and re-instruction. This was happening about 8% of the time. This was designed to make it clear that he was not satisfied, but followed by an immediate reminder of the correct way to do something. For instance, I've been telling some of you for 3 years not to wind up when you throw the ball. Pass from the chest. Next up were praise at 6.9%. Scolds or reproofs, as he preferred them to be called, at 6.6%, positive modeling or how to do something at 2.8%, and negative modeling or how not to do something at 1.6%. So altogether, about 75% of Wooden's teaching acts contained specific information geared at providing the athlete with a clear picture of what to do or what not to do. The researchers felt that this was a major contributor to his coaching success. It also made perfect sense, given that Wooden, at his core, always saw himself as an educator. After all, simply knowing that something is good or bad is not especially helpful if you don't know what exactly should be repeated or changed the next time. Otherwise, it's just more shots in the dark. Plus, taking evaluation out of the equation helped to make his teaching less personal and therefore easier for players to accept without becoming defensive. As one of his players later explained, as a former student who committed many errors during practice and therefore having been the recipient of plenty of corrections, it was the information I received during the correction that I needed most. Having received it, I could then make the adjustments and changes needed. It was the information that promoted change. Had the majority of Coach Wooden's corrective strategies been positive, like good job, or negative, like no, that's not the way, I would have been left with an evaluation, not a solution. Also, corrections in the form of information did not address or attack me as a person. New information was aimed at the act rather than the actor. Another of the researchers' interesting findings was their observation of how Wooden modeled behavior. When Wooden saw something he didn't like and stopped practice to correct the incorrectly executed technique, he would immediately demonstrate the correct way to do the technique, then show everyone the incorrect way the athlete just did it, then model the correct way again. This correct, incorrect, correct sandwich was usually very brief and succinct, rarely lasting longer than 5 seconds. But this modeling technique made it very clear what his expectations were and how to meet those expectations. There's much that we can apply from John Wooden's coaching methods to how we teach others, but it also seems to me that much of this is equally relevant in how we teach ourselves as well. Because at the end of the day, we probably don't need tons of mental self-fives for hitting the difficult notes. It's not like beating ourselves up and calling ourselves names for missing notes helps much either. After all, in the practice room, as on the practice court, it's less about whether we are perfect or imperfect, or winning or losing. It's more about making sure we're growing and learning from day to day. As the authors note about Wooden in their 2004 reanalysis of the original data, quote, "It was the teaching and practices that he valued, more than the games and the winning, and it was practice that he was so reluctant to leave behind when he retired." The 2004 reanalysis also includes some additional nuances and insights beyond the 1976 paper. They report, for instance, that Wooden made sure to keep his players constantly active and moving quickly from one drill to the next during practice, his goal being to simulate the intensity of games and ensure players were accustomed to the demands of competition. It seems that he achieved this goal, too, as former player and NBA great Bill Walton has said that, quote, "Practices at UCLA were nonstop, electric, supercharged, intense, demanding," and that, quote, "games seemed like they happened in a slower gear." This doesn't mean that we have to treat every single minute of practice like a performance, of course. But if the goal is to be more comfortable in performance and play our best, I do think there's something to be said for trying to bring more of the stage to the practice room, instead of hoping we'll be able to bring the practice room to the stage. And what might that look like? It can take many forms, from recording a 30-second snippet of your concerto for your turtle every morning, to playing a full mock audition round after a dark roast triple ristretto for a colleague who makes you slightly nervous. But the idea might be less about manufacturing nerves and more about giving yourself plenty of opportunities to practice the skills you'll rely on in performance, whether you're nervous or excited. Skills like the ability to hit a tricky note on the first try rather than on the second, or the ability to get into and stay in the right headspace, be able to focus on the music instead of how to move your fingers correctly, or diffuse the end-of-the-world pressure you might feel, or shut off the unhelpful mental chatter, or avoid the downward spiral of doom after missing a note. Fortunately, performance practice doesn't have to be uncomfortable, and it doesn't have to take up much time either, but it does help to integrate microdoses of this into your daily practice well in advance of a performance or audition. Of course, it can often be difficult to get ourselves to do this on our own, so if you have auditions or performances coming up in the next 3 to 6 months, or would simply like to be able to play more like yourself in any setting, whether it's lessons, masterclasses, choir practice, or for informal gatherings of friends and family, you might be interested in the live online 4-week performance practice course that begins in 2 weeks on Saturday, October 8th. You'll learn how to use several research-based strategies that will make your daily practice more effective and efficient, and I might even say fun, And we'll also explore strategies for beating nerves, getting into the zone, and building more trust and confidence in yourself and your abilities on stage. We'll work on practicing performing in teeny tiny doses, and we'll be your accountability buddy too, to ensure that your inner procrastination monkey doesn't win quite so easily. Registration's now open through Sunday, October 2nd, and you can get all the dates and details and sign up at bulletproofmusician.com/learners. You can find links to this week's study and other related practice hacks at bulletproofmusician.com/blog. You can also find a quick and dirty 30-second summary of the study on Instagram at bulletproofmusician. And if you found this episode helpful, please do share it with a friend or practice buddy who you think would also enjoy experimenting with it during the coming week.